Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
coronavirus, COVID-19, some of the things happening out here in Australia at the moment, but moreover, I'm just going to try and regurgitate some of the basic science that I used to teach at school, and you may be a bit rusty on, and this is saying what a virus is, how a virus works, and general lessons learned about viruses that you teach in school, at least in Australian schools. Well, for the moment, it's following its standard sort of thriller novel level of the government giving advice, conspiracy theories evolving, people considering shutting down borders, economies shutting down, and the world getting used to it. I suppose one of the most incredible pictures I've seen is the picture of pollution above China, and then the industry stopping and the pollution dropping. And perhaps it's a major thought, and you can imagine the number of deaths per year or per day due to that level of pollution in such a large populous country. But it's sort of right out of the pages of a thriller novel, as it's described page by page, without perhaps the individual stories which would pop out in a subplot and a love interest which cuts across viral lines. Now, in Australia, yes, there's been a bit of panic buying, but there's sort of been a bit of a tongue-in-cheek panic buying in terms of that there's been a rush on toilet paper and, and cans of tuna. So all the toilet paper, not in any supermarket I know, but in certain areas, in certain chains, the toilet paper has been stocked up. And it sort of gives you an idea of the word of mouth, the confusion, the fear, the following. You know, the toilet paper's going, let's buy it before it all disappears. And, of course, there's a large non-China-related supply chain and the inability to, if necessary, deliver toilet paper to your door and an iPhone app. But, you know, people, you can imagine, well, people doing it and people not dying of it. Definitely stock up on your medicines, I've been told. And I unfortunately had to stock up on my medicine just to shut the people out. So I'm doing it. Okay, let's move on. I'm just buying my next month's worth of medicines now. Specifically, that when I go into there, I say, one of the things is I like just buy just enough medicine just in time, because the medication may change, so I don't have it there, and that it's out of respect to everybody else. You know, so one person, you don't have three people on a medication and they buy a huge amount of medication each, stockpile it, have no need, and then all of a sudden ask for it again when their stockpiles come down. So that's the overall thing. There's been a few large supermarket chains. Costco, I think it's a US brand, these sort of very large warehouse pallet load type of things where you can buy large quantities, and people have, it's an area you can sort of see panic buying goes to panicky people who buy in panicky ways, and so you can see little bits of panic buying coming along. People with more hands and, you know, more time on their hands, and sort of this strange feeling of isolation, that what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be sitting on the toilet wiping my bottom over and over and over with big piles of toilet paper, and the world can go to hell, but I'll be okay as long as I've got large amounts of toilet paper. Now, let's go into the theory of diseases. So there's lifestyle diseases, like eating too much fat, not being mobile enough, not exercising enough, drinking too much, having the wrong diet, all this type of stuff can lead to a lifestyle disease. There's diseases which are physical diseases, like my heart condition, my heart was the wrong shape, and all that type of stuff, or you can get cancers. And then there's diseases which are caused by a range of things out to eat you. Now, there can be big things, insects, ants, worms, all things which decide to call you home. There can be protozoa. This is prokaryote. These are primitive waterborne organisms, slimes and funguses. Fungus is very interesting, and all because it's not an animal or a plant. It actually lives by actually growing very fine fibers, hyphae, and actually it just basically skewers you. It skewers each cell, kills it, and then dissolves it on the outside. It's how a fungus works, and it's all these are out there. And the world is designed that if there's any food about, it settles on it and eats it just as well. So it decomposes. The entire thing is that you fight decomposition. So we've got down to big going down. You've got bacteria. So bacteria are not eukaryotic. They're a form of life. There's archaea, bacteria, and eukaryotic cells, and these little things are bacteria. Are very, very small. They've got a hard outer casing of a bacteria molecule, ribose, with lactic acid and an amino acid chain sticking on the outside, forming a very nice, solid, hard cell. So one of the things you can do is you can rupture bacteria with sound waves, because it's got this hard shell, and they've all got the same hard shell. So you can actually clean up bacteria with chemicals rather easily with chemicals. Then we come down to... So bacteria are good. They've got the reproduction machinery in itself. All it needs to reproduce is a piece of bacteria. Bacteria, in effect, never dies. It only divides and increases in time, and then eventually dies due to mishap or something like that. But it just continues to double. So it can double every couple of minutes if it really wants to, or double every hour or beyond, and eventually grow, sort of double and double and double. So they can grow. And bacteria are very small, so they can actually go within the cells. Bacteria like funguses as well. And eukaryotes have evolved the ability to have little hairs on the outside and little flagella to swim around the place. So they can do things. They can move to area. They have quorum signaling, so they act as a social system. And so they can swim around the place sit on yourself. Then there are bacteria. Now, bacteria are basically, sorry, not bacteria, there's viruses. Viruses are what we know as virus. They hijack your DNA or RNA and have an elaborate scam. They're the ultimate scammers. So if you start off with your bacteria, you've got your DNA hijack material, the actual lethal code, and that's surrounded by a protein shell layer. And that shell layer has the important aspects of it, is that it is a biologically active shell layer. So it's not just a thing there and you've got to say, "Here, little cell, eat it." When the cell sees it, your cells are living things and they eat all the time. They eat nutrient, they eat anything on top of it saying, "Hi, I'm food," and it eats it. And so essentially bacteria coats itself with eat me code on the outside. And so when this sits on the outside of the cell membrane pulls it in, seals it off and forms it into a little tube. And it will have instructions coming through that to say, "Take me to your nucleus," and a couple of little legs, I'm not joking, a couple of little legs in your cell are called dienesin. These little legs, they will get on your actin bridge. These are if you cite a skeleton, and you cite a skeleton that forms a gel of these little bridges, it'll take you the bacteria from the outside, and these little thing will take in a vacuole, which is a loop. So your virus then gets held together. Now, once it gets in, it may discard its bits of it. So it may get in, throw bits away, and only have a section of it which gets walked into your nucleus. Now, this is a simplified version because they can either replicate inside the nucleus or outside the nucleus. Now, there's RNA retroviruses, these really complicated processes in which they go, but this is the simplest version. So your COVID-19 has got an outer layer, which you've seen pitched this way with all these little nodules on it, and these nodules will be enough to say to your cells, take me in. Now, what actually happens is that normally a bat cell is different from a whatever cell is different from another cell, and essentially, in this case, the bat went into a pangolin on the outside. A pangolin on the outside survived a moderate level and then walked into the walked into humans, and so where it's very successful, not so successful in pangolin, but its time in pangolins or the intermediate animal was enough. So the really direct transmission, humans to bats, from time to time. So there's the actual mode of transmission, but also there's the conditioning of the transition. So if you went back to your bats, you would probably not find the exact COVID-19. The COVID-19 has gone through some evolution. How it does through evolution is natural selection, of course, but also your random mutations. Now, the thing is that a virus doesn't have the elaborate mutation repair mechanisms, so it's on one aspect it's got simplicity such that and lack of redundancy, so if it mutates it normally dies, but it does a lot, it can do a lot of mutation, and depending on the structure and complexity of it and redundancy of it, it can mutate. Once it's up and running, it can mutate quite a lot. So your virus, your flus are of that category. We don't know about COVID-19. COVID-19 seems to be at a bottleneck of evolution. It can't evolve very much. However, it could perhaps have an evolutionary step where it can evolve rapidly. So there could be some step which it then has to go through, and then it evolves rapidly. And if it evolves rapidly, it could become very lethal or could burn out very quickly. The general thing is that viruses evolve to, in a population, to have maximum life in that population. So if it hits the accelerator too much and kills the organism before it can spread the virus, it'll die out. We've got to keep the organisms non-symptomatic and spreading their viruses. Sometimes it's people say, look at this and think, oh, it's thinking. No, it's not thinking. It's trying all these different things. It's like doing all these, you're going up into a bar, you've got no charm whatsoever, you just have got your book of one-liners and you just read your one-liner one after the other after the other, and then you hit your girl, you say, good enough, we're off. And viruses are a bit like that. Although you're looking at the outside, you say, the women are selecting men who can successfully read their book. I can't quite describe it like that. So your virus is actually taken from your cell wall into your nucleus. The nucleus is a membrane. It's got pores in it. That is holes which stuff can be chucked through. And those holes are generally outlet holes. And the nucleus is holding the DNA under pressure. So the DNA absorbs water, and so the water absorbent DNA is sprung apart as a gel. So it's sort of the DNA is inside your cell, unpacked, spilling out, ready to go. And when it makes some RNA, it hates the RNA, and the RNA jets out, and so you've got this thing under pressure, and so things, the cell is continuously tending, stuffing things in, stuffs in some nutrients, some basic things. The cell knows to feed its nucleus. It feeds its nucleus. The nucleus is basic chemicals, and the nucleus has got chemicals and repair mechanisms and all this marvelous enzymes, all these big enzymes which would never fit out. They're just wombling around in there. And basically, it's got to have the basic amino, the RNA components shoved into it. And essentially, when the cell, say, the cell detects basic, let's say lactic acid, for instance, it discovers there's lots of lactic acid around the place. Shit, we're going to get rid of the lactic acid. A enzyme secretes a signaler, a DNA signaler. That DNA signaler is taken from where it's detected, walked all the way back into the RNA, into the nucleus. That big chunk of molecule somehow gets in there. That goes in there and unlocks copies of a thing to make lactose dissolver. So in the time of you drinking a thing of milk, you produce more lactose in response to it. This is a really fast thing, so these can operate really quickly. And so you've got to, the nucleus has got to be able to get information from the outside world to know what to do. It's like a shorter order chef. And basically, it doesn't produce stuff, it produces the menu. So we've got a busload of Japanese tourists have landed at our Aussie town. God, we've got to give them heaps of sushi, blah, 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 stuff like that. I don't have the recipe for that. My kitchen isn't geared up for it. My little kitchen's not geared up for it. Lo and behold, the message that the Japanese bus has arrived goes into the nucleus. Out from the nucleus goes the chef instructions, the menu instructions, and the ribose, things, the RNA manufacturing machines go into order, see, these very primitive machines, and they start chomping out things. Now, essentially, if you can actually get in there and say, hello, I am from your nucleus. Absolutely. Now, what I'd like you to produce is basically a little minivan and pack it full a copy of myself. Oh, no reason. How many orders? Basically, produce as many as you go till you kill yourself. So what happens is that these minivans get produced with copies of the RNA viruses. Now, the copy of that minivan may have been discarded, the shell may have been discarded, because it's really unusual for that shell to make it into the nucleus. So normally the shell breaks apart, and it goes in all the way across, and absolutely it goes into your cell. Then your cell is going around producing minivans. Now, what actually happens is that there's a whole series of things. So you could actually say, for the virus itself, a virus, remember, a virus is really, really small. It's actually too small it's like a piece of seasoning or something like that. It's something that you're not going to pick up. But you can put antibodies on it. So these antibodies are produced by the body, and they stick onto the virus in certain ways. So your body fights COVID-19 completely in 14 days. Every human alive either dies or comes up with a solution. That solution, unfortunately, is not necessarily easily transferable, but your body is producing antibodies for it. They either clock onto the virus itself and lock it off, go, you're fucked, mate. Just have one of these badges. Oh, it fits into me perfectly. It was one of the stuff that I've evolved on the outside to lock onto something, but it seems to have, and so for some reason, your cells and other things know that if there's any of this antibody on, the various white cells kill it. So this is, I think, I've forgotten. Not season. The The and immune system is enormously complex. I decided that I would print it out for class, and truly it was, it would have fitted in on a wall of a classroom in not incredibly small print, large-ish print with circles going around and dotted lines. We don't know how this works. This extremely complicated process coming along. Another thing it can do is that in the event that you get an order to produce so many minivans like this, whatever it is, just put this to the outer of your cell. Blood oath, I'll put it on the outside if you want me to, so that your cells are communicating in and out. The entire thing of an organism is that there's heaps of chemical communication, everything happening in you the entire time. So another thing it can do is it can put a immune thing in to signal the cell, to tell the cell it's sick. And if it's sick, the white T cell, which is this fantastic amoeba-like thing, it's flexible. It can move. It can actually shape-shift. It can actually go in between cells. It can detect things. It can actually leave your body and walk around your skin, apparently, at night, and walk back into your tear duct. These are your white cells. These are the amazing defenders, and they're in breast milk as well. So, yeah. You know, you get squirted with breast milk, or as you're thinking, your breast milk will go out, the baby go, ugh, you know how they dribble out of breast milk. Those little white cells will walk around and clean up a few of the bacteria, clean up baby a bit, and stink to high heaven as it goes. And these cells here, they're feeling the cells all right, and they go, not at all sharp. Okay, who won last year's premiership? Name one thing that a female kangaroo has that a male kangaroo doesn't have. You say a pouch and stuff like that, and you'd say, who was the first person on the moon? You'd say, well, you didn't have it. The moon landing didn't happen. That's a complete fake. Ian, you're in. You are an Australian. You can survive. Whereas it's sort of like border security stuff. And then, before you know it, you are wrapped in, and your cell is, for when it's cell, I'm not going to use you for something, I don't need you for nutrients or for various things. It then gets liposomes. These are things basically designed, there's a whole series of little tablets put into you, so it wraps it. Cytoflagist. I really wish I remember the name for it. It's a name for enveloping you. So if you want to eat something, you have to wrap yourself completely around it. Then I used to do this with students, get them to make a cell and show them how to eat in a cell. And how they eat in a cell is that their nutrients on the outside, they wrap around it outside, twist, peel off, and they have a little packet inside, a sort of reverse complex packaging. So it's packaged your living cell up, and then it goes, because the last thing you want to do is, if the cell is, oh well, you're fucked, and then you just hit it with a plasma ray beam and it bursts into a number of things. You want to actually say, okay, well, Bonnie and Clyde, you're in the house now, we're actually wrapping your entire house up, sealing it up, gassing it, putting acids and enzymes in, destroying every last molecule of it when it's completely dead, putting it out there. And this is, it's a very messy thing. So this is basically, your snot is full of frontline fighting of cells versus, you know, you versus bacteria, big bloody fight out, and the DNA springs out. So a lot of your gooiness of your snot is actually uncoiled cellulars, DNA coming out them. It basically pus. It is a really big, messy battle. Big pustule balls come out. Now, what this thing is coming out is that it creates a big fight up. These minivans sit in your phlegm, you cough, the phlegm goes down to your hand, and it goes out. Now, we're beginning to learn a few things. I think it's 4 days exposure before it either dries out or something like that. A lot of these things, they're not cells, so they don't have... They're very small, so they're good in terms that they can work themselves undercover. They can work undercover. So you want to wash your hands, you want to remove the dirt, get underneath the dirt. It's a question. It's really questionable whether a mask would actually stop a viral particle. But if the viral particle is on a piece of dried phlegm, the phlegm will work out, and so it will be embedded as a jewel, encrusted like an olive in a piece of pizza. So you might be able to do it. The hand washers. Well, one thing that probably won't work on is Dettol, because Dettol is designed to dissolve the surface of bacteria. Ideal, most fantastic job. Dettol, you could possibly forget your acids and stuff like that. Oh shit. Ultraviolet light will sure wreak havoc with something like that. And so ultraviolet light's rather good because it activates a surface, energizes a surface, and the actual energized gas, something like that, will move and migrate and stick onto the delicate, oh so delicate, I know what I'm going to, I'm all dressed up to get be irresistible myself into a mammal cell. So it goes across like that. So that this would say that there would be various things that you could do. I'd say ultraviolet light, hand cream, sanitizing hand cream, your alcohols, your isopropyl. I really wonder whether lemon juice is going to be a good thing for it. And it sure as hell, some hellhole of an honours student has got this task at the moment of Australia is the first country on earth to get it, manufacture it, and manufacture it in large quantities. So there'll be some poor person there testing out different hand gels and stuff like that. And in general, the coughing and sneezing and cruises really didn't appeal to me very much, simply because I'm an outdoors person. Cruise scripts increase in volume by the cube of their distance, distances you come across, but the only surface area drops down on the outside, which you could possibly enjoy from the outside, drops down as the square of the area. So your volume to surface area ratio drops as you get into bigger and bigger cruise ships. Didn't appeal to me whatsoever. Now the idea is that you have handrails. Well, my fundamental thing is that you could do things like you want handrails, blah blah blah. What, just thinking off the top of my head, is that you could have one doesn't know, one, it's really complex in terms of that you do something and it has an effect in terms of what it actually does and its behavior does. So if you do something and it changes the behavior and it's ineffective and the behavior changes, what you do can actually do against it. But these are some of the things I would possibly do is for not much extra cost, have ultraviolet LEDs in public transport. That is, you jack on there and basically have, while the people aren't there, while the train's not running, you bathe the entire godforsaken area in ultraviolet light, sort of black light. I don't know. I would have to do it. You've got the problem is that this goes on the surface of it. There's this fundamental thing that you would definitely things which the most biologically deadly thing is chlorine gas, obviously, but you could get a metastable oxygen, ozone generators to produce. So you just have an ozone generator, and you just have it in your bus at night. The bus comes into the depot, you put your little ozone generator in there, that would thoroughly clean it out. For cruise ships, you know, one of the things I would do is have heating elements inside the handrails. Obviously, it's going to be fucking dangerous. Some little old burns their hands on the handrail, but it would, like you're told not to hold the handrails and stuff like that. And that's one of the things that have gone missing in Australia's hand sanitizers. What exactly is in a hand sanitizer? We now have air drying. I'm not quite sure whether I like the idea of this air drying, because it does dry your hands, but it does actually create a mist to go in it. The other thing is to try and actually work out susceptibility to coronaviruses. Also, essentially anyone in contact with it, there's sort of this long lead time for when you detect people who are there, and basically you want a GPS positioner on every suspected person so that you can actually start to track them. And then when you find that, oh no, this... So what happens is that you find your first group of people and who they've contacted with, and then they test that group of people. And in that group of people, in the time, there's a waiting time when you work out that secondary group, and you're beginning to lock them down. But what would be good is that they're saying, oh, look, here we've come across, here's the GPS position that... You're at a risk, but we can find you and stuff, and sort of work out where you are and get the basic going. You've got the schools tracking down. Perhaps overall, as a health thing, as the population increases, these large people going to large institutions, spending a large amount of time doing largely ineffective learning. Perhaps we should. Perhaps learn from that. What I actually do think is that this is sort of COVID-19 is a moderately bad virus. I've been told, or due to Bill Gates, 1917 was, I think, 2%. This is less than 15. It's 57 was less than 1%. Death rate. We're going to have a death rate here associated with this in between. So it's a moderate one. The story is that there's probably going to be a worse one in time, and so we can actually learn the processes. What is interesting is that I think I would say is that part of getting access to international medicine would be to sign up to an international reporting scheme. That is, that if you are signed up, and that you get medicines regardless of who you are, what the embargo is, whether the US likes you or not. Iran is rather a sad case because it's been cut and basically wrestled to the ground by a United States which is sort of pursuing a policy with them, which means that they're in the same position already. Like if you keep on bashing someone up in a bar fight, they sort of are fighting you, so to speak. I'm not that I know too much about it. I sort of did What is it? A military essay about Iraq and Iran before the Iraq-Iran war really broke out, many years before that. And so there's a lot to understand there. However, what you really want to do is have basically a blockchain-style method of anonymization, of but authentication of genuine risk data, such that the authorities in a totalitarian regime know that it doesn't work. The totalitarian view can't work because it's out there anyway. People are very much... I think the idea of containing the information is also a vote of confidence in your ability to contain the information, your ignorance going through them. So going through this, I think we are possibly in for a rough ride. It's going to be probably a very intense ride because we will be able to actually see every last case evolve. We won't have sort of a little bit internationally, a little bit nationally, and a couple of local stories. Your ability to gather information about this is going to be absolutely horrendous, and the ability to learn things from it will be horrendous. And you know, there's pretty much little you can do about it. I know a lot of old people saying, well, that's it. That's how it's going to happen. Or looking at old people's homes, going, "Oh my godfather!" So there are people. Obviously, heart patients are one of the people who we have, by the most amazing pieces of technology, kept them up alive. So we've treated their cancer. Just people I've been rehabilitating with who have had. You know, of the people here, diabetics, you think diabetics and cancer over there, and it's sort of like this purpose of saying, well, I'm in all groups, we as a society have been pumping huge amounts of money in for it, and these people, by United States methods, they're not rich people, they're just ordinary people, and we in Australia have said, just read the packet. I read the packet on me as a doctor, and the thing is, I think we voted in a medical system which treats everyone equally, and so just as well, because I myself can't see the economic value in terms of treating me. I've cost so much to treat so far. So come across you. So you've got this happening across here. So all the very best for you in whatever country you are, and keep on listening. And major thing is, don't listen to anybody. Don't listen to podcasts. They're bad for you.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.